Welcome to the Transcontinental Race Podcast, finding its way with Komoot, the home of those who go further. Komoot's the ultimate route planner and navigation app that helps you explore more.
Bienvenue à Brest. This is the final point de contrôle for all the riders for the TCR. And we're really excited to welcome everyone to this finish point for what has been a really, really difficult TCR this year.
Oh my word. Like, that wind is horrid. It's just absolutely brutal. Every pedal stroke you have to fight for to get into the finish. Going up, going down, trying to stay on the bike. It's like wrestling a bull. It'll send you left and then it'll swirl around and it'll pull you back across. So yeah, you're just fighting it.
This is Adrian Reynolds, Cap 34. He arrived at the control a few minutes after I turned up in control car one. On the drive over from Alpe d'Huez with race director Anna Haslock and photographer James Robertson, the wind had been gusting across central and northern France. When we saw the riders, it was just as Adrian described. You could see their grip on the bars, them battling to keep their line of travel true. Adrian was the 36th rider at the finish.
That long, long climb up to the tower is rotten. Absolutely rotten. And coming down, it's twice as bad. Coming down, it's worse than going up it.
As he stood there, raindrops dripped to the floor from his jacket. His eyes were alive, but his eyelids had a droop that belied the brutality of the last few hundred kilometres. I asked Adrian how it felt to finish the race.
I mean, awesome. I've got to be fair. When I applied, I didn't expect to get in. And then when I got in, it was an old crap moment. And then from then on, you just think, can you finish it? And the aim really originally was just to finish. I think everybody would like to be here for the party, wouldn't they, at the end? And then the race starts and you go, okay, I'm not too bad. Oh no, hang on a minute, I'm not feeling great. And it ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. And you get to a point where you clock, you go, you know what, I've got enough, I've banked enough to make sure I do make the party. And when that comes on, you start to feel like you've got a feel for the race, how it works, when to get up, when to go to bed, how much work you need to put in, when it's smashing it down and thundering and lightning, whether it's worth getting an hotel room, and all of that sort of stuff just starts to come together a little bit. But it's awesome. It's a beautiful thing.
Can you tell me about that ride in?
It's very difficult to handle the wind, I think.
The last stretch had almost drained everything from Stina Svensson, Cap 216.
I was screaming a lot at the mountain. But there was no one hearing me after. But it helped. It was messy. But now it's done.
When Nick Spencer-Velikov stepped in the door, like lightning, a beer appeared in his hand.
Kind of wanted like a nice relaxing run in, but there's a pair just behind me, so I was trying to hold them off, and they had like 30k, like 150k go, and then last time I checked, then they had like 10k, 50k go, and 10k to go, they were like 3k behind me, so I was like, they're not coming by. I got blown off the road twice on the top of the hill, just like.
Two, five, seven, A and B. This is B and this is A.
257 A and B are Espen Udner-Landgraf and Emmanuel Verde.
The last bit was
quite windy today.
Yeah. It was the hardest parkour.
The hardest parkour by far.
Yeah.
It was quite fun.
Almost get angry. So
feels kind of good not having to jump back on the bike in 5 minutes and continue cycling. I got to say. I should turn off the music.
We have a speaker on the bike.
Yeah, the speaker on the.
This has saved many a day.
Yeah. Have you had any tracks that you've gone back to rely on?
Shakira. And some hip stunt line. And Michael Bolton with Go the Distance.
The second pair to arrive at the control were Michael Jurek, 249A, and Zlatimira Petrova, 249B. The last time I'd seen them was at the top of the parkour before control point 2, not long after they'd woken up.
We were really lucky because it started raining and then we found this shop. So it had a quite big kind of like awning, and then there was like a sofa and some chairs, so we just stayed there.
Two kitties, one slept on me, on my belly.
I wonder why it didn't actually fall off. It was so smelly.
They reached the finish on Saturday morning after 14 days, 8 hours and 17 minutes. So because you're a pair, I have to ask you the obligatory questions about being a pair.
Are we still a pair?
Yeah, we're still a pair. There seem to still be a couple as well.
Yeah, well, I think it was okay, to be honest, no?
Or? Better than 2 years ago.
Yeah, because we sort of became a pair 2 years ago and did this year last time. And
what do you mean? You got together on the TCR?
Well, we were doing it solo, and then we kind of met and we sort of stayed together, which obviously broke the rules, but we kind of still together.
It was worth it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
How did it happen?
Well, we were cycling in Monte Grappa. We started cycling together.
Yeah, well, we met on the first CP. Then we split again, and then we met again.
Well, we kept on splitting because I had a better route, but he was faster. Well. So we'll kind of be waiting for each other or stuff. So yeah, at the end we just decided to cycle together and kind of stay together till the finish.
Here we are again.
Do you live in the same place?
We cycle for the same club, but we didn't really speak to each other before this. So
yeah, we kind of saw each other a couple of times just on the club rides, and that was it. Yeah. And for a bit, we didn't even know each of us is doing TCR.
I only found out at the end because he was just going out drinking.
Training. Yeah.
He was not training. I was like, how is this guy doing TCR?
See, I should have done the same this year as well. Still smashed anyway.
The headwind, that was, yeah.
It wasn't exactly the plan for the last kilometres to be this gruelling. When I spoke to race director Anna Haslock at the start of the race, her vision was that the riders would have
a lovely, iconic finish at Brest, just in time for Paris to arrive.
Which wasn't quite the assessment of Felix Newman, Cap 21.
That was definitely the most unpleasant 300 kilometres I've ever cycled. Off the big climb, I was doing like 20 downhill, pedalling, because I just couldn't, the wind was just so strong.
But the finish in Brest is symbolic. Since 1891, it served as the midpoint for the 1,200-kilometre randonnée Paris-Brest-Paris, known as PBP. And to pay tribute to the legacy of this race, the Transcontinental ends here just 6 days before the start of PBP. It's the oldest long-distance randonnée in the world, and it was born out of a new type of riding called Audax that had been championed by a French newspaper editor called Henri de Granger.
He was inspired by 12 Italian cyclists who rode from Rome to Naples, a distance of around 230 kilometres in the same day between dawn and dusk. So this was big news back in the day, certainly nothing that had been done before. And he found this amazing and decided to take this on and take it to kind of an actual formal club scenario.
Paul Rainbow is the founder of Audax Club Bristol. And he told me that when de Granger got behind Audax, the way it was ridden was completely different.
He set up what was called Audax Club Parisien with the kind of group riding style. So a captain would lead the riders. They had a fixed pace of 18 kilometres an hour following a captain. Scheduled stops and brevet cards exactly as we have today. And this type of riding does still go on. In France, they still have the traditional style Audax, which does follow that captain-led, set-pace group riding format. And even PBP does still have, I think every 4 years, out of sync with the main event, you can still do that as a group ride in the traditional format. But it's a very different type of ride to the type of Audax or long-distance events we do today.
At the start of 1891, a 600-kilometre bike race from Paris to Bordeaux was held. It was a feat of endurance for both man and machine that hadn't been seen before, and its popularity was huge. The race caught the attention of a savvy newspaper editor called Pierre Giffard. He saw how the race had boosted newspaper sales, and he set up the first Paris-Brest-Paris race later that year.
The first winner of that event was Charles Tarrant, and he won without sleep in 71 hours, 22 minutes, and 99 riders of the 207 finished, some taking several days. Amazing times considering what they were riding.
When Charles Tarrant reached the finish, he was surrounded by thousands of cheering fans. But it had been such a feat of organisation that it was 10 years until Paris-Brest-Paris ran again. And who should organise it but Henri de Granger? Maurice Garin was the winner, and 2 years later, when de Granger organised the first Tour de France, Garin won that too. The race ran again in 1911, but by 1920, Audax took a step closer to the format it's best known for today.
there was a disagreement between Desgranger and Audax Club Parisien, and he then pulled out of that organisation. But at that point, they did create this, what's known as a la libre, free-paced version of the sport. And then that's the point at which riders became solo and could do the events on their own, and they were awarded the certificate called a brevet de randonneur. So that's kind of 1920s, probably the big turning point in which these rides became solo long-distance events. It was a very popular event up until 50s, really, with professional cyclists were the main ones riding it. But it was such a tough event that it was eventually, I think in around 1957, they decided to stop entering it as a professional race because it was just messing up their yearly schedule where they're trying to train for events like the Tour de France, and they've got this horrific kind of 1200 kilometre nightmare they've got to train for in the middle of it. So it kind of fell out of favour with the pro teams around the 50s, but its legendary status as probably the world's first ultra distance super cycling race has kind of meant that people from all around the world have always wanted to ride it. And with it being an event you can only do every 4 years as well, I think that kind of magic has kept it popular with the public. And certainly lots of riders who just dreamt of riding something like the Tour never could, if they're not a pro team rider, can go along and ride the PBP and be part of cycling history.
This year's winner of the Transcontinental Race, Fiona Kolbinger, will be riding Paris-Brest-Paris. I asked her how she thinks that will be off the back of the effort she put in to win.
Yeah, good question. I have no idea. I mean, it's when I was planning those two rides kind of back to back, I was always only thinking about the TCR. So Paris-Brest-Paris was always, oh well, that's far behind TCR. I just need to finish that one first, and then the rest is going to feel easy. And so by now, I mean, my legs have recovered. I'm sitting here in my cycling gear, and I'm about to do a small spin around Brest, and I'm feeling pretty good actually. So actually, I'm also planning to ride back to Paris from Brest, so I'm doing Burgas, Brest, Paris this summer, which is even, yeah, making it a bit more stupid, but I feel great and I'm looking forward to it. Apparently it's a completely different thing than the TCR. It's non-competitive, and I'm really looking forward to the Audax aspect of it. So talking to people, drafting a little bit, then sitting in a group, having lunch, just sitting down for food. It's a lot more relaxed than the TCR, and especially because it's non-competitive, I have 90 hours to complete it, which feels like a huge amount of time after the TCR. So I really do it just to enjoy it, and the Paris-Brest-Paris is just like a huge party, and I'm happy to be part of that party.
I'll be interested to see whether she wants to get the party started with a faster part, especially as she's likely to start lined up alongside Bjorn Lennard, who has the record for the fastest time in the race's modern incarnation. The full interview with Fiona will be released very soon, so please subscribe for that. But first, while with PBP, part of the experience is seeing thousands of people cheering you along the way, with the TCR, fans that have been dot-watching coming out to meet riders can be difficult. This year, as Fiona rode west, the numbers of people coming out to see her and talk to her grew to a level that we've not seen before on the Transcontinental Race. It's a self-supported race, and the autonomous nature of it means that riders often cherish the space and the freedom that the ride gives them. If their route becomes crowded with people, as good as their intentions may be, the cumulative effect on riders can be negative, as race coordinator Rory Kemper and race director Anna Haslock explain.
We've always had dot watchers, and we've always had a community of people on an online forum or like who follow the race online. And it's emotive, and it allows people to draw, just use their imagination to think about actually how what that rider's doing and how that rider's suffering. And there's always been dot watchers or people who come out onto the road and want to say hi, because obviously they just visualize you as a dot on a map. But this year it's been different. And we were, you know, every time a rider was coming in, they were like saying, oh, it's crazy. Like, I've just been on the road and there's been 10 people wanting to speak to me, which is really, really, really unusual. And I think a lot of that was driven by the way the race has been run this year coming into Brest. It's more accessible to more people. And obviously people were very excited about Fiona being in the lead. And Fiona obviously found it quite challenging at times. You know, she says, oh, it was fine, but there was times if you asked her, well, straight after she arrived at control point, she'd be like, I just wanted to get here, and there was people trying to speak to me. And you don't want to be, like, you know, people are excited, and you don't want to basically tell them to, like, look, just leave me alone. Because they've been standing probably for 3 hours on the side of the road waiting to see someone come past. But it's just that mindfulness, thinking about actually, it's not just you that's asking, like, start trying to stop the rider. It's like 5, 6, 7, or 8 different people. And it's that accumulative effect. And if you really want to see a rider, you've got to come down to the control point, because that's in a place where there are people around, and you can have the community spirit with that and enjoy that process. You know, it's nice to see someone, but when you're like, you're 75k from the end, and that 75k is probably the longest out of the 4,000 kilometers, and it doesn't matter what distance is left, that last bit is always the worst, because you just want to get it done. And yeah, and the last thing you need is someone saying, oh, can I have your photo? It's like, dude, I really like you.
Not right now.
All I want to do is, I just want to get to Brest and see my family and process what I've managed to do.
And also appreciate, like, because, you know, they have been on this long 4,000 kilometer journey, and that last bit, that, like, it's almost like that's their, even though it's really hard, it is their reward. Like, that last bit is still part of their solo journey. And if that last 75k or whatever it is full of people shoving cameras in your face and asking you questions that you haven't got the energy to answer, that's taken away from them, and that's a surprise. Like, they're not expecting it to be taken from them. So, you know, not only are they kind of trying to deal with something when they're exhausted, but, you know, this part of their suffering, or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, part of their journey is suddenly kind of taken away from them. And the whole point of this journey is that they've chosen it and they've made it. And if somebody then takes it from you, that's quite difficult to handle.
It is. And I think the transcontinental isn't really about the start or the finish. It's definitely about the bits in the middle, and which is why, okay, the start is spectacular and it's great to see everyone riding off, but that's over really, really quickly, and then you might not see anyone for ages. And it's that journey across the continent where, you know, and you hear the riders coming in talking about it, like, it's the therapy. It's like the process of breaking yourself down physically and mentally, and then slowly processing and rebuilding yourself back up again. And when they finish, actually the finish is irrelevant. They finish because, and they're happy they finish, but they come in, it's just over. And they get a handshake and they get like a hug. And you do end up smiling and a kiss, if you're lucky. And they just go on their way. And it's so the finish isn't the important bit, but it's also the bit that they're the most fragile when they come in.
Thanks for listening to the Transcontinental Podcast, supported by Komoot. I'm Tom Bonnet, and in the next episode, I'll be at the finishers' party, sharing the riders' best stories from the road and bringing you more of my interview with Fiona Kolbinger. But right now, the riders are still arriving at the finish, and I want to introduce you to Shinichi, who touched the hearts of us all as we gathered to cheer him in.
105, Shinichi Chuwachi from Tokyo. I'm one of the first riders as a Japanese to participate this race. And then I am now the first Japanese rider finished this race. So I'm very proud of this. But Japanese people don't know how much this. How much race this race is wonderful, and there is so much to learn. Thank you very much.
Surrender.
Crazy world.